Welcome to the IT Rockstars podcast. Our mission is to transform the way you grow your technology business.
Hey, Laura.
Hello.
How's it going?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad. Sorry, I'm a little bit late.
That's all right.
I was looking for the most appropriate background to speak to someone in regards to insurance.
Yeah, I think that's quite good.
How's your Friday going?
Really well, thank you. Yeah, yeah. Really well. Had a tough start to the week, so today has been a blessing.
Okay. Yeah, well.
Yeah, so. No, that's fine. I was going to question, do we get a copy before it goes live, or does it just go live?
It just goes live. I mean, unless you want it in a copy, like if you want to do stuff with it. I don't know if you, like, have you done like things like this before, like podcasts and stuff like this?
So this is my first podcast. I do tend to do a lot of videos for LinkedIn. They're very raw, and they literally just go out as is. But yeah, so I was tempted to use snippets.
Okay.
Anything that can help. So
yeah, so you could like take this video and like just like snip it into like a short or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's like software that does all of that now as well, which is pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, I use, to be fair, at the moment, I'm using CapCut. I find that really useful, so.
Okay. I think I've used that one before. And I was on your, before I was out for a little cycle before I sat down here, and I thought I'd better go and check out your LinkedIn and stuff like that. So I did watch one of your videos. Can't remember what you were talking about. It was like your latest one. You were talking about how you had a bad start to the week or something.
Yeah,
so I hope things are better now.
Things,
or was that last week?
No, that literally was as of yesterday. So essentially my mum has been in hospital for just over a week, and she got out yesterday, thankfully.
Okay.
So yeah, definitely a very nice end to the week with her being released and given the all clear to go home. So
oh wow, I guess that's good news if she's out of hospital.
Yeah.
Oh wow, yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
So, as I said, these podcasts, I've been doing it for like 2 years. I haven't done it in 2 years. So like, I'm just like starting this back up now. And I think like your name was mentioned.
Yeah.
I think, I can't remember who mentioned your name, but you were tagged somewhere on LinkedIn. Like, oh, you should interview Laura. So that's kind of like why you're here, I guess.
Yeah, I think there were quite a few of us, to be fair. All of the girls jumped together. I think all of the women jumped together on there were quite a couple of names, good names mentioned, to be fair, which was nice. So
what? Yeah, it was all women, like, and like there was people like complaining, how come you don't interview women, Scott? And I'm like, I do. I just never used any images of women in the LinkedIn post. So.
I wasn't one of those, to be fair. I do think there was a comment, and I don't actually think it was one of the women that made the comment.
Okay.
But yeah, there's obviously there's quite a few of us now in the technology area or supporting the technology area, which is nice.
There always has been, in one way or another.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, so yeah, you're the second female that I've had on in two years. So you're the second. So. If I mess this up, that's my excuse.
Don't worry.
Okay. So the first, I've got like a list of questions here. I'll tell you the truth here, Laura. Insurance to me, like I'm sure to a lot of people, and you probably know this yourself, is like, it's just like one of these things you got to have. And it's like, for me, it's like, it feels like quite a boring topic, but I apologize in advance. So what I did was I went to ChatGPT and I explained to ChatGPT that I've got this podcast interview. This is my audience. Laura's coming on, and I hope I did the right prompt. I told the ChatGPT like a little bit, what about you do? So I was like, give me some really good questions that would make this useful for my audience of managed service providers and IT providers that know that I have this insurance expert on. So I've literally got a question list from ChatGPT. But if I will have my own questions as well, but let's just like, let me know like what you do first. I think that's the first thing, because like I just know that it's some form of insurance. That's what you do. And yeah. I had a look on your LinkedIn, but apart from that, I'm completely ignorant. Apologies.
No. Honestly, it's fine. And I think my LinkedIn probably doesn't say enough about what I do, because it's not about selling myself on LinkedIn. My LinkedIn's mainly for the knowledge base, like to obviously show people the videos on how to be more risk aware, how to be more cyber resilient and stuff.
Okay.
And essentially, what to look out for, because everybody has that knee-jerk reaction, completely understandably, with insurance, that it's a necessary evil, something you've got to have, you know, a tick box at the end of the year. So what I do is I work with predominantly technology companies, MSPs, and their clients.
Okay.
But supporting them with their general insurances. So that's everything from your office to your stock, your fleet, professional indemnity, cyber, whatever. But also supporting their clients from a cyber insurance perspective. Because when things do go wrong, you want to make sure that your client has the cyber insurance policy in place, and you want to have some kind of faith that that's the right policy in place. It's not just something that's been bought online for a fiver.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's fundamentally what I do.
So you work with managed service providers and their end clients, is that right?
Yeah. So okay. Essentially, a lot of my MSPs are quite happy to recommend their clients to me to look at their cyber insurance. If they've got any queries, they want someone to talk them through it in a layman's terms. Again, a lot of people's hesitation with insurance is insurance companies make it too complex. It doesn't need to be.
Yeah. Well, I know certainly, like, the only experience I've got is from like a cyber perspective is like filling out the annual renewal of cyber insurance, and there just seems to be more and more questions on the renewal form, or more compliance required. That's a difficulty that I've faced myself. I'm going to assume that like your clients have something similar. Is that what you help with, like helping them fill it in?
This podcast is sponsored by MSP Games. Are you looking to grow your IT or cyber services business? Want to discover the newest, most fun way to generate high-quality leads for your technology business? Visit msp.games and join our next game. Learn, connect, and discover how you can grow your IT business and have fun at the same time. msp.games. Join the fun.
Yeah, it is. I think you're right. The forms are extremely long. They can be extremely complex. There's a lot of the questions are very much open to interpretation.
Exactly. So it's like you fill it in, you pay the money, and like, oh, they're probably going to catch me out, you know, because I've answered one of these questions wrong. That's how I always feel.
Yeah.
Even when it comes to car insurance, I'm the same. But
I completely agree. I really do. And I think that's where the MSPs prefer to get a broker involved with their clients, because you've got a translator. So I suppose that's what you want to call me, really, as a translator between techie speak and insurer speak, okay. Making sure that everything is understood.
Okay.
Yeah.
So because you work with managed service providers, what do you see in the marketplace as like their biggest risks and liabilities? This is like a ChatGPT question, but I think it's actually a really good one, because it's like, okay, you go and fill in that form and you think you've answered it all correctly, but what's like the biggest risks that you see that are maybe mistakes that people are making?
From an MSP perspective, I think the biggest thing that I see is the business description. Time and time again with various MSPs that I've seen come through and do reviews for, the first point is they leave it until renewal. You don't need to do that. You can review a policy at any point during the year. It keeps it simple, actually, if you review it through the year rather than it stressing at renewal. And then in terms of the business description, they'll put themselves down sometimes as IT consultant, because nothing really fits MSP. That's kind of the nearest fit for them.
Why but they're is a hell.
Like insurance,
if you're insuring MSPs, well, why is there not one that fits MSPs?
Yeah, insurers have a set list of drop downs on their websites. They're trying to keep the online quote system as simple as possible. So what I mean by that is they only want simple clients to take the policies online. So hence why they've got a limited selection for marketing, for generic sales, for consultancy work. It's the simplified policies. When it comes to MSPs, obviously with everything that they get involved with, from frontline support, backups, cybersecurity, etc., there's a lot more to it.
Doesn't that make it more difficult if you can't like answer the question correctly?
Well, it does, but essentially...
It's not making it simple.
No, and I think that's where, I'm biased, but that's where a broker comes in, because the broker wouldn't put it into a simple drop-down box. You'd get a full description of what you do and how you're doing it. Somebody would translate that from the MSP to the insurer and get insured correctly. So
their choice is like IT consultants. So as you, as the, like, I guess you're the intermediary, I can't even say that word, you're the broker. Is that the right terminology?
Yeah.
So how are you telling the insurance, you know, the insurance provider what this person is or this company?
So, like, sorry.
I'm not trying to be difficult. The reason I'm asking this question is, like, the government, certainly here in the UK and the States actually, they want to start to regulate MSPs because of all of the cyber attacks. But if I can't even, like, specify that I'm an MSP on my cyber insurance form, it's like... How are you going to standardize it if there's like basic things like that that are missing?
Well, it's not even from a cyber insurance point of view as well. It's your professional indemnity. It's your office. It's everything, essentially. This is where the advised broker stance comes
in. This is where you come in.
Yeah. If you utilize an advised broker, then they have those conversations with the insurance companies. Whereas if you're doing it yourself online, obviously you have to try and translate that to somebody. So you'd phone them up, you try and have a conversation with them, but because they're non-advised, so they're not actually allowed to provide advice, they're not regulated to do so. They kind of just put the onus back on the MSP, which it isn't fair, but that's obviously where the regulations sort of constrict them.
Okay, all right, good, so back to my original question then, which was, what are the biggest risks and liabilities that like an IT provider has, like, you know, when they're filling it and they're going for this insurance for their company? What would the biggest ones be?
It would be not having that advice. So not being able to talk to somebody about your business, how it's structured, what you need to support your business to grow over the next 3, 5, 10 years. It's good, again, I am biased and I appreciate it's going to come across as broker, but it's good to have somebody who's got that advice, because they can support your business and your growth journey and make sure that not only do your insurers understand what you're paying for, but also that you understand what you're paying for. There's nothing worse than paying for a policy and not knowing what it does.
I can relate to that. I mean, the biggest issue I've had with insurance, I think, was like my roof collapsing in my house. Like, that's like the only example I can give you. But now I'm like, because there's always this question, my mind is like, you know, do I even go back for, you know, contents insurance, because the renewal is going to be extremely high because I had to make a claim on it. I don't even know how that works, but I'm going completely off track here. Apologies.
It's okay.
Tell me, all right, I'm going to change this up a little bit. Now, one of the things we've got here at IT Rockstars, the conversation, hopefully going in the right direction here, because it's called the MSP Games. And this is about how to, like, have fun in your IT business. So one of the questions that I'm now asking everyone that comes on the podcast is, how do you have fun in your business, Laura? Like, what's fun for you?
Fun for me would be Tech Tribe events, actually, the networking events. CompTIA and Tech Tribe. Techies just know how to have fun. I consider myself a techie as well. I enjoy technology. I like having conversations with people that are like-minded with me. So, yeah, I class them as my fun.
Excellent. Well, that's good. I have been to a couple up here. Like, so I'm based in this little town called Huntly, northeast of, it's like in Aberdeen, next to Aberdeen. But there's not that many IT providers. But I know the Tech Tribe events are pretty big down south with you guys. There's a few of them, isn't there?
Yeah, I've got two that I attend, essentially. So there's one which is Walsall, and then we've got the South Birmingham one. So they're run by Gareth and Michelle. So Michelle Coombs and Gareth Westwood.
I know them both. Yeah. I need to get to it. They're too far for me, though. So so that's how you like to have fun. Okay, here's the next ChatGPT question.
Okay.
I really should have prepared for this, like, better than I am. But I do apologize. All right. Are there any specific insurance coverages that are often overlooked by MSPs that are crucial for their protection and success?
Oh, that is quite a tough one. I think I'm going to answer that with most MSPs are pretty clued up on risk. They assess and deal with their clients' risk on such a regular basis that they are pretty good with knowing what they need in terms of their insurances. The two biggest ones, obviously, other than employer's liability, the legal requirement is the professional indemnity and the cyber. So I think it's mainly their clients, they struggle to translate. The whole world struggles to translate to everybody how important it is to be cyber resilient. And I think that's really the recommendation with MSPs is making sure that their clients have got cyber. If they don't, then unfortunately people tend to point the finger back to the MSPs. So it then hits their own professional indemnity, which obviously I'm trying to avoid.
Mm-hmm. And do you help with that? Is that, you know, are you looking at like their legal agreement with their clients and then basing your policy off of what they've got with their clients? How does that work?
No, so I don't get involved with legal agreements. That's a solicitor's job. And there are so many resources out there. I think CompTIA have got resources, Tech Tribe have got resources. There's lots of people that specialise in the legal agreements. What we do obviously offer is blogs to educate their clients, the videos that I do to educate their clients. I've got lots of material that they can send to their clients. I've got my booking link on my LinkedIn and via my email so people can have conversations with me. MSPs don't want to have conversations about cyber insurance, and they shouldn't be, because it's a regulated thing to discuss. So they can essentially send their clients to me and I can do that education piece with their clients.
Okay. And do you have any stories like where, you know, the cyber insurance that you've signed off and, you know, it's maybe worked or it hasn't worked for our client? Is there any examples of that you can give where it's like, this has actually turned into be a really useful thing to have?
So trying to think how best to answer that.
You don't have to have any names or anything, but like the story I have, like I heard it was an MSP that used to be a competitor of mine when I was running my own MSP, and he was telling me specifically about how one of his clients got hacked, and I was amazed that he was so honest with the story. And it was really good to hear, okay, here's how the hack happened. But it's things like, okay, you know, they lost operations, you know, did that cyber insurance policy come to fruition? You know, were they able to claim off of it?
I think there's a story that I've told about a client that moved over to me 2 years ago. So before she was with me, she did have issues with the insurer that she was with for her cyber. So they're a reasonably big charity. Obviously, I can't name names because of confidentiality and all the data protection. But before she came over to us, she was with an insurer that didn't have a 24/7 claim line. So by the time the lines opened, 9 o'clock, the damage had well and truly been done. It caused difficulties for her, and the MSP that she had at the time obviously was trying to do everything they can to stop. then
Can
the
I ask how can having a 24/7 call center number help you when you're in that type of situation?
So cyber insurers have access to panels of experts. Those
Okay.
experts jump on a triage call with the MSP, if the client has one, to essentially come up with a plan, shut the hackers out. It obviously there's lots of different variables depending on whether it's ransomware or whether it's BEC, etc., business email compromise, sorry. But if I pick the typical one, ransomware, systems completely locked down. In what good looks like, the MSP would shut them off the network. The client would call that 24/7 claims line. They'd get a triage together between the cyber insurance specialists, the client, and the MSP, come up with an action plan of what to do, how to get the systems back up and running, debate the whole do we pay the ransomware. Notify, obviously, if the data's been sold on the dark web, notify all of those affected individuals, get solicitors, legals, public relations involved. That's what good looks like. And unfortunately, obviously, with the client that I mentioned, the difficulty was by the time the cyber insurers had opened, that everything had already been done, all the damage had already been done, so it was a lot worse than if they'd have been able to get hold of the insurer when it happened and crack on with things and get things moving.
I see. Okay. Yeah, not a great position to be in. So what's the lesson there then?
The lesson is make sure that you, if your clients have got cyber, check that they've got a 24/7 claims line, because sadly, not all insurers provide that.
Okay, so that should almost be like part of like your response plan. Like it should be
Yeah.
in there. You know, they have like these playbooks that they go by, and they're supposed to every month go through like a little playbook. Okay, we've got hacks, and this is the steps that we have to follow.
Yeah.
So that should be in the playbook.
Yeah, it is essentially, so first port of call, obviously shut the client off, from the system, however you do that, but get your client to phone their cyber insurers, make sure they've got that 24/7 claims line.
Cool. All right. Next question. What's the best type of client for you, Laura? Like, if you're looking for a brand new customer today, what's your ideal customer?
Personally, MSPs. Again, MSPs are so risk aware because of what they do for their clients. I'm the type of person where I'm very risk minded. I'm very technical. I like my detail. So we just align really well. And because of that alignment, I also tend to find that I align with being able to help them with their customers. So I see it as like a nice circle of being able to support them not only with their own policies but their clients' policies.
What type of MSPs? Because that's quite a general term. I mean, you get one-man bands, you get MSPs with, 50, 100 staff, you get MSPs that work in different types of industries, particular types of industries that are maybe sort of more close to government or finance. Is there any particular type of MSP, a certain maturity?
No, in all honesty, I have got every client from the one-man bands, because that's one thing people have said to me before. Oh, you won't look at me because I'm only a one-man band. That's not the case. I don't discriminate based on size. It doesn't matter to me whether they are a one-man band or a 250-man band. I'm lucky that my sales manager, Trevor, supports me. Obviously, if there is somebody that is exceptionally big, he steps. The two of us come in and obviously look at it so that that client's got double aspect support essentially.
Okay. So what, maybe phrase my question a little bit differently. You're saying just kind of any type of MSP. What's the most profitable type of MSP for you?
It doesn't make a difference. So in terms of the way that insurers work, we all get built-in commissions. It's the same as essentially any regulated industry. It has to be very transparent. So it's not like for a small client, I'm going to charge them a minimum fee or anything like that. It's all sort of built in. It's across the board. With very, very large clients, obviously you will get they'll start a fee structure because it wouldn't be fair on the client to earn, I don't know, 20% commission on somebody paying 100,000. That balance of fairness is kind of knocked out.
And what about, you mentioned like you work with MSPs and you work with their clients. How do you, like, are you taking on the, you're going to Tech Tribe events? So I'm going to assume that you're starting these relationships off with MSPs, you're getting their insurance put into place. How are you starting the conversations off with their clients? Is it like a referral, or are you running an event with these MSPs? How does that work?
A bit of both, actually. So with some of the MSPs, they like to refer their clients to me, and they'll essentially say, look, we know of an insurance broker that works in the industry. She's got knowledge on cyber liability and able to source good policies. Other times I've done live events. So I did one in April, which was went to London, talked to various people. I'm quite easygoing, really. I think the key thing for me is it's all about a slow build of that relationship. I'm not going to expect somebody to trust me straight away. That's not how the world works. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, some people have developed into friends rather than clients, which is really nice. I suppose it's exactly the same way an MSP builds up their client base. It's you build that relationship first, you get to know the people, get to know the business, you work out if it's a good fit for you, good fit for them, and go from there.
Yeah, it's all about the relationships, isn't it?
Yeah.
The last question I've got here then. So what trends are you seeing in the cyber insurance market that maybe MSPs should be aware of? I mentioned there that the forms get more complicated every year, but you got your ear to the ground with this stuff. What are you seeing in regards to trends?
So I think all of the insurers are probably panicking a little bit about the application of artificial intelligence. There's quite a debate, isn't there, in the technology world about whether it's truly artificial intelligence, and the general consensus is it's not, it's still fed by us. But I think AI is one that insurers worry about, because you've got Joe Blogs that maybe doesn't know, they're trying to use it to help them with an email, and they put all this client data in to ChatGPT. So I think that's what insurers are starting to get concerned about, really.
So are they worried that the data would leak out of that large language model, or are they worried that they're using responses that might not be accurate?
Probably a bit of both, in all honesty. The main one that I hear from insurers is the fact that people are putting data into the likes of ChatGPT. I hadn't thought about it from the aspect of people using it and getting the wrong advice, but that's probably one I'll take back to the insurers and have a conversation on.
Yeah, it's a big one. So it's almost like it needs a human, like, I've developed an AI policy for one of my clients, and because that was one of the first things that they were worried about, it's like, oh, we can go put all of our project data into OpenAI system, and it's like, well, it says in the terms and conditions that future models will be, built on the data that you're feeding to it. Mm-hmm. So we came up with the AI policy. One of the points within it was the responses back are just as important to check as well. But we've also got, we do have Copilot. At the time of recording, that's all in a Microsoft 365 tenant. So it's like a wrapper for your data that you're entering into that large language model.
Yeah.
Supposedly, the future models aren't going to be trained on that private data. So that's the biggest thing from you. I mean, how do you insure against AI if you have no idea what it's going to be in a year's time?
I think you've got a lot of insurers. So some of the big ones, for example, like the CFC is one of them, do have an internal research department. So they actually do serious research in technology, up and coming technologies. They're a very strong insurer for, they're not just insuring cyber, they're also looking into the future, working out where the technology market is, and doing a bit of foresight, whereas I think some other insurers are maybe, waiting around and waiting for that stuff to happen, and for other insurers to maybe take a risk on those aspects first.
Yeah.
I think that's the other thing I'll just mention very briefly to be careful of, is so many insurers will dip in and out of the market and go, we want MSPs this year because that's our sort of target.
The sales target, yeah.
Yeah, and then next year they'll go, oh, actually, MSPs are a little bit scary this year, so we'll not go for that.
Too much risk.
Consistency. Yeah, consistency is a good thing. You don't want to go through the hassle of moving one year to one insurer and then moving the next year and the next. It's not always a good thing to sort of bop around.
Unlike car insurance. Okay.
Car insurance is definitely one to shop around on. Mine shot up. Oh my God, £360.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
Oh,
Yeah.
painful.
Wonder, I can only guess that's because they need to try and capture more money before cars drive themselves and we no longer need
Well,
insurance. That's the only thing I can think it's for.
yeah,
So, I
I
mean, who's going to need it? You know, they'll be driving themselves.
that scares me personally. I think I quite like the experience of driving myself, so
I don't know. I'm in two minds about it. I mean, the good thing is this full self-driving capability. They're testing it in America and China first. They're like the guinea pigs. Like the
yeah.
EU and the UK, we're not allowed the full self-driving yet. So,
No.
you know, they've got quite a few people that they can test it on first before it comes here.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Well, we'll leave it there, Laura. I usually ask at the start before I press record. Is there any questions you want me to ask in here to make this a win for you? So if there's anything I haven't asked or just information you want to give the audience, what would that be?
I think personally, it's just my main aim is to knowledge share. And the one question I would ask is, I would love to hear from people what they want me to talk about.
Okay.
I can't do my videos and be successful with my knowledge sharing if I don't know what to share. So yeah, I'd love some suggestions from viewers on what they'd like to hear about insurance, even if it's a really difficult question. I kind of love them too. So
I'm good. Yeah, it's a difficult one. It's like, what questions would someone have? Like the biggest one for me is like, how can I fill in the insurance form easier? And that's probably where you come in because you can help me fill
yeah.
it in. I'm going to assume that when someone gets a, like a cyber attack, then there's going to be lots of questions on why the insurance never paid out, or why this thing says this thing in the insurance form that I have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there actually, I've got one. So, like, you're obviously weighted on risk when you're filling out these renewals and insurance forms. Answering the questions from an MSP's perspective is, and for their clients, is there maybe two or three like technical things that they can really get right that will reduce the renewal, reduce the risk, sorry, which obviously is going to reduce the cost of the insurance.
Yeah.
Is there any questions like that that you're maybe aware of, and that they can really work towards, and maybe compliance related or anything like that?
I think the absolute bare minimum now to getting a cyber policy is multi-factor authentication.
I knew you were going to say
It
that.
is. It's the absolute bare minimum. I think
Okay.
accreditations, but not just the basic accreditations. I'm talking, not the mark your own homework stuff, the audited stuff,
So
like,
the Cyber Essentials Plus.
yeah, and the ISOs and all of
Okay.
that. But yeah. Certified accreditations. I think CompTIA have also got the CompTIA ISAL,
Okay.
NIST. There's so many out there, but yeah, actual
Quite a
signed off
few,
accreditations. Yeah,
and that'll help reduce the risk. Okay,
it does. It does.
yeah. So a little content, a little bit of video like that is probably gone because like everyone's wanting to try and save money. So if they can reduce the risk, saying that though, the accreditations cost money, so there is that. So
They do. I
yeah.
think. It's a balance, isn't it? Because an accreditation is never going to discount a premium to the cost of the accreditation,
Yeah.
but it's that security that MSPs can put out to their clients. It's the security that their clients can put out to all of their clients, and it's just that whole risk management, being a pro risk management, positive risk management.
Yeah, cool. Okay. That's hopefully I've given you some ideas then.
Thank you.
ChatGPT maybe has as well.
Okay.
Have you are you up to
Thank you.
are you up to much this weekend?
To be honest, I've got a horse, so I tend to spend a lot of my downtime with the horse over the weekends. And we've got me and a friend have got a foal, so that's hard work.
Is it like one of these rented ones that you kind of look after, or is it like you actually own it?
Yeah, she's mine essentially. Okay. So I've got my own. I've had her 12 years now.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, long time.
That's a cool hobby. My daughter, she went on a horse for the first time about a month ago. And she loved it. Like her friend's got it's like a timeshare. I don't know what the right terminology for it is. on this horse. It seems like quite a good deal because I don't think you have to pay for the vet bills or anything like that, and there's like all the upkeep. But she just loved it, like the horse. So she's now asking me, "Oh, horses, bad horses." I'm like, "Have you seen my bank balance?" It's not happening. So
it can prove to be quite an expensive hobby.
It's good though because it gets you outdoors and back to nature and.
I do love it, to be fair. I'm pretty much out from, I'd say, 9 o'clock in the morning till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so if my friends need to find me, they know I'm in a field.
Yeah, well, that's excellent.